Go ahead and turn in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 1. You'll turn there. You'll be ready for the study that we'll begin here in a few moments. Proverbs chapter 1. Leah is also out sick this morning. She suffered a concussion yesterday. It was sort of ironic in my mind that in the Auburn football game last night, there were no concussions. But in that fierce non-contact sport of volleyball yesterday, Leah suffered a concussion. So she's going to be all right, I think. Just very sensitive to light right now, just a little foggy. But she's out with that, and Lynn is with her this morning. I also want to mention that I believe that this is Josh and Sarah Edwards' last Sunday with us. Josh broke one of the cardinal rules and took a job in another town, back up in the Tuscumbia Muscle Shoals area. But we do want to let them both know that we love you and appreciate you, and staying in touch with us is required, by the way. But anyway, we appreciate and love them very much. The book of Proverbs, I'm sure if you've read it before, you realize that it contains a lot of wisdom on a lot of different subjects. And we want to look at one of those subjects in the lesson this morning. We want to particularly focus on some principles in Proverbs that have to do with our relationship with God. And we're really going to basically make three major points from Proverbs about our relationship to God. The first one will be that in order to have the proper relationship with God, we need to have a fear of Him. Okay, that'll be the first major point. The second point that we'll make in the lesson today is that certain things are described as an abomination to the Lord. And so obviously we can't practice those things and still maintain a relationship with the Lord. And then the third major point will be that our relationship with others greatly affects our relationship with God. So those are the three principles that we'll be developing in some detail as we look through the book of Proverbs this morning. So let's begin with this first point about how in order to have a proper relationship with God, we need to have a fear of Him. Now, why is this fear of the Lord so important? Well, look in chapter 1 and verse 7. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, why is that so? Well, I think it's pretty clear. If we have a fear of the Lord, then we want to know very much what it is that pleases Him. Somebody that we have a fear of, we want to do right in their eyes. We want to please them. And so we want to know what it is that pleases them. Now, notice by contrast what is said about fools in the latter part of this verse. It says they despise wisdom and instruction. They don't listen to it. They don't care nearly enough about it. Someone who has a fear of the Lord embraces wisdom and instruction and knowledge. That kind of person wants to know exactly what it is that pleases our God in heaven. Now, there are some other, of course, valuable things about this fear of the Lord. Look in Proverbs 10 and verse 27. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 27. The fear of the Lord prolongs days, but the years of the wicked will be shortened. Well, how does the fear of the Lord prolong our days? In other words, how does the fear of the Lord help us to live longer? Well, there are a couple of passages that I think explain that a little bit further. Look over in Proverbs 16, in verse 6. Proverbs 16 and verse 6. In mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity. And by the fear of the Lord, one departs from evil. So if you have a fear of the Lord, you're going to depart from evil. You don't want anything to do with it. You're going to run away from it. You don't want to do those things that are displeasing to the Lord. You look over in chapter 19 and verse 23. The fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it will abide in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. And so again, we come back to the question, how is it that the fear of the Lord prolongs our days? Well, a fear of the Lord keeps us from doing evil and suffering the consequences from doing that evil. We do understand that some lives are cut short by the consequences of the evil that they do, right? How many people have contracted diseases because of sexual immorality and have had their lives cut short by that? It happens, doesn't it? How many lives have been cut short by heavy use of alcohol and tobacco? I was just hearing the other day, and the number has slipped my mind, but it was pretty stunning to me how many alcohol-related deaths there are on the highway in the state of Alabama every year. Again, I've forgotten the exact number, but it was very, very high. And it really caught me by surprise. I never would have dreamed it was that many. It happens all the time. Even the stress associated with guilt. In other words, if you get past just the consequences of particular actions, just the stress associated with guilt takes its toll on a lot of people and cuts short their lives. And so, again, there are no guarantees here, okay? You can live a godly life, you know, still, you know, get cancer and die at an early age, okay? It doesn't necessarily mean that you've done anything wrong. But we also know that living a clean, pure, and holy life can lead to a long life. We at least avoid the consequences of some of these evil things. Proverbs 22 in verse 4 also brings in another aspect to this. Proverbs 22 in verse 4. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. I believe the general principle here is that not only can a fear of the Lord increase the quantity of our days, but it can also increase the quality of our days. It leads to a much more satisfying, fulfilling life even here on this earth, when we have a fear of the Lord and when we depart from evil and we want to know what's pleasing to Him and we're eager to do what is pleasing to Him. Proverbs 15 in verse 16 explains at least one reason why that is so. Proverbs 15 in verse 16. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. We know that there are people who are blessed with material things in an abundant way. And yet their lives are filled with all kinds of anxiety. There's fussing and fighting within the family. There's fussing and fighting with other people. There's not a whole lot of peace and contentment there, is there? And that's really the purpose of this passage. here's somebody maybe who doesn't have a whole lot and yet has that peace and contentment. And he says that person is better off than the person who has a whole lot of material things and yet lacks that peace and contentment. Look in Proverbs 14. Proverbs 14, verses 26 and 27. Again, just talking about the value of this fear of the Lord and the quality of life that can come from that. In verse 26, in the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence, and His children will have a place of refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. When we're serving God, we can be confident, knowing that we're pleasing Him, knowing that we're heeding His Word, knowing that we are in Him, that we have fellowship with Him, to be able to sing with confidence the song, "It is well with my soul." That means a whole lot, doesn't it? That assurance, that confidence that we have in Jesus Christ. I love the whole idea here that he presents of having in him a place of refuge. You may remember, it's probably been maybe even a year ago, we preached about this idea of how the Lord is a place of refuge from so many things in this life that tend to trouble so many people. He's a place of refuge from all of those things. Now, you might want to keep a place, a marker there in Proverbs, but let's go over to 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3, just kind of talking a little bit more about this assurance and confidence. 1 John 3, beginning with verse 19. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before Him. For if our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart and knows all things. Beloved, if our heart does not condemn us, we have confidence toward God. And whatever we ask, we receive from Him, because we keep His commandments and do those things that are pleasing in His sight. I'm sure you feel the same way as I do, in that we hold people in great esteem who seem to have more than their share of heartache in this life. And yet, it would seem that they're almost unperturbed by all of this heartache. You know, in other words, there's still a peace, there's still a calm with them, there's still a confidence with them, and you think, how in the world can they maintain such an outlook with all that's going on in their life? Really, I believe the answer is because they believe the things that we've been reading here in Proverbs. They believe what we just read from 1 John chapter 3. They have that confidence. They have that assurance. They know that if they keep doing what is pleasing in His sight, if they keep heeding His Word, if they keep turning to Him in prayer, that everything is going to be all right. And I admire greatly people who can have that kind of outlook. But really, that kind of outlook is possible for all of us. It's very attainable for each and every one of us. Who knows what's in front of us? Who knows what heartache, sorrow is waiting on us? Maybe this afternoon. Maybe within this next week. So we've got to have a fear of Him, an awe, a respect for Him. We've got to want to know what's pleasing to Him. We've got to turn to Him as a place of refuge. We've got to, you know, learn to have that confidence, that assurance, so that we can be sustained through all of these difficult times. There's one other point we want to make about the fear of the Lord and its value. And we're saving it for last, but it is certainly not least. Proverbs 23. verses 17 and 18. Proverbs 23, verses 17 and 18. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. The thing that is ultimately of value when it comes to a fear of the Lord is that it leads to eternal life. And so think about all that we've looked at so far. A fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. A fear of the Lord can increase our time here on this earth. Not only increase the quantity of our days, but also the quality of our days, and ultimately it can lead to eternal life. So you think there's some value in this fear of the Lord? It's brought out in a number of ways here in the book of Proverbs. Now let's move on to our second major point. There are some things described as an abomination to the Lord. And obviously we can't maintain a relationship with Him and practice those things. Now, seven of those things are listed in Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6, beginning with verse 16. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to Him. The first one on the list, a proud look. Later on in the book of Proverbs, there's a passage that says, everyone proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. That's over in chapter 16 and verse 5. Then he says, a lying tongue. Lying is an abomination to the Lord. If you're looking for another passage in Proverbs to maybe emphasize this even a little bit more, Proverbs 12 and verse 22 says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are His delight. He hates lying. He abhors it. Now, He delights in the truth. And so let's make sure that we understand. Let's don't just look at it from the negative side. Let's look at it more from the positive side. When we tell the truth, the Lord delights in that. And you know as well as I do, typically, we don't have a problem with that. I would like to think that most of us, you know, as a general rule, tell the truth. Now, when is it difficult to do so? Well, it gets a little harder, doesn't it, when there's a little pressure on us. You know, when maybe there's an advantage to be gained by telling a lie, maybe at work or whatever, or young people, sometimes there's that temptation to lie to kind of get yourself out of a little bit of trouble, right, with your parents. Did you do this? Did you go here? Now, you told me you were going to go over here. Now, I'm getting some different reports. I need to know the truth about this. Boy, it sure is hard to go ahead and just say, well, Mom, Dad, I'm just going to level with you. I didn't go where I was supposed to go. It's a little tough then, doesn't it? And if you do tell the truth, you may have to suffer some consequences for that if you broke some rule of your parents or whatever. But please understand, once again, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are His delight. The next thing on the list there in Proverbs 6 is hands that shed innocent blood. We know what that is, right? Murder. And yes, that would include what? It would include abortion. Make no mistake about it, abortion is murder. It happens all the time, every day. Those innocent babies are being killed all the time. That's an abomination to the Lord. Any murder, really, is an abomination to the Lord. The next thing on the list, a heart that devises wicked plans. And any heart that would do that obviously does not possess that fear of the Lord that we talked about in the first point. Feet that are swift in running to evil. Someone who would rather do evil than good. And even hastens to do evil. And then there's a particular form of lying mentioned there in that Proverbs 6 list. A false witness who speaks lies. To me, it's interesting that instead of just, you know, leaving it as lying, you know, in the early part of it, you know, which would include really any form of lying, including this one, he specifies this one. And think about the harm that's done by a false witness. And I think the harm that's done by a false witness is illustrated by a later passage in Proverbs over in chapter 17, in verse 15, which says, "He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the just, both of them alike are an abomination to the Lord." And that's what a false witness can do. He may wind up condemning someone who is just, but he also may justify someone who is wicked. And that's getting it all backwards, isn't it? A false witness is an abomination to the Lord. And then let's make sure that we give plenty of attention to this last one on the list. One who sows discord among brethren. And there are a variety of ways that one can accomplish that. One can accomplish that just with an ill disposition. Just be hard to get along with in so many ways. And then you've got those, and I'm hearing more and more of this type of person, the one that's just always pushing the envelope. Always wanting to do something different. Things that at the very best would be questionable, at the worst would be just completely unauthorized in the Scriptures. The one who sows discord, who creates disunity among brethren, is an abomination to the Lord. Now, there are some other things listed in Proverbs. Sometimes we focus so much on Proverbs 6 that we forget about some of these other passages. Look over in chapter 11 and verse 1. Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. Dishonest scales, why would that be such an abomination? Because that's cheating other people, right? Think about if at all of our gas stations, they sort of recalibrated, you know, those scales a little bit, you know, the thing that figures up, you know, the price and the gallon and all that. If they change that up just a little bit, boy, it would hurt a lot of people, wouldn't it? Grocery stores, they could kind of tweak those scales a little bit and have people paying more. It oppresses people. It cheats people. You cheat people when you oppress people in that way. That's an abomination to the Lord. Proverbs 16 and verse 12. Proverbs 16 and verse 12, "It is an abomination for kings to commit wickedness, for a throne is established by righteousness." I don't think we have to think very long to know why that's the case, because here's someone who wields a powerful influence. A king who, instead of using that position to lead people in the right way, leads people in the wrong way, is an abomination to the Lord. Proverbs 15 and verse 8. We want to really look at two passages here together and then draw a conclusion. Proverbs 15 and verse 8. Read it carefully now. "The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. Now, together with that, let's look in chapter 28 and verse 9. Proverbs 28 and verse 9. One who turns away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer, is an abomination. I think you see the same principle really in both passages, don't you? The worship and prayer of those who turn away from God's law. The worship and prayer of those who really do not give careful heed to God's commandments is an abomination to the Lord. Now, you would have a hard time convincing folks of that. In fact, I believe the view of most people would be that that prayer, that worship would almost be a cover then. That would make up then for all this other stuff that I've done. I know I don't talk like I should. I know I don't act like I should. But I did worship the Lord and I do pray to Him. But what He's saying in this passage is, if that's your mindset, if that's your approach to life, then your worship and prayer is an abomination to Him. Now, let's move on to our third major point, and that is that our relationship with God is greatly affected by our relationship with others. Proverbs 14 and verse 31. We're going to look at a number of passages here. Look at them pretty quickly. Proverbs 14 and verse 31. He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy. Does that remind you in any way of a New Testament passage? Really, I believe the principle here is the very same as there in Matthew chapter 25. Verses 31 through 46. Remember Jesus separating the sheep from the goats? The sheep were those who visited the sick, who visited those in prison, who took care of those in need. He said, all right, whenever you do this to me, to them, you do it to me. And then, of course, he talks about those who neglected to do these things. He said, when you don't do these things for these people, then you're not doing it for me. Very same principle taught here in Proverbs 14 and verse 31. Proverbs 17 and verse 5. He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. To ridicule or to make fun of someone's misfortune, the Lord is not pleased with that one iota. He says, you will not go unpunished if that's your attitude toward those who are suffering. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given. Chapter 22. Proverbs 22, beginning in verse 22. Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause and plunder the soul of those who plunder them. You see how serious business this mistreatment of others is and how it impacts our relationship with the Lord. Look in Proverbs 15 and verse 25. Proverbs 15 and verse 25. The Lord will destroy the house of the proud, but He will establish the boundary of the widow. The Lord has great concern for the widow, and so should we. If you look also in Proverbs 23, not only is he concerned for the widow, but look at who he's described here. Proverbs 23 in verse 10 beginning, do not remove the ancient landmark nor enter the fields of the fatherless. For their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you." Really, the last two passages should remind us of James 1 and verse 27. Pure religion and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit the orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. You know, even our relationship with our enemies also impacts our relationship to God. Look at a couple of passages on that. Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24, verses 17 and 18. "Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. And do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn his wrath, or turn away his wrath from him." And then over in chapter 25, in Proverbs 25, beginning in verse 21, this should sound familiar to us because it's found in Romans 12. "If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you." Well, that's tough to do, isn't it? Got any personal enemies? Got any personal enemies? And even if you wouldn't necessarily style them as an enemy, just somebody that you've just got a real big problem with right now. Do you find it difficult to continue to do good for them? Sometimes I think more of the problem is not necessarily that we're doing them any harm. I think most Christians are able to keep themselves from doing harm to those who maybe they have an issue with or some kind of rift between them. I think sometimes the problem more is that we withhold good from them. We withhold good. Or we just can't bring ourselves to say anything nice, to do anything nice. And that's a problem. This is a test of character. Some people pass it, and some people fail it. We need to make sure that we pass that test. Now, I want to bring in something that I think needs to provide a little balance, especially to the passage we read in chapter 24 just a minute ago. It plainly says that we should not rejoice when an enemy falls. Now, how do you reconcile that with, for example, in Revelation 18 and verse 20, the people of God are called upon to rejoice over the fall of Babylon. And I do believe Babylon is represented, a representative of Rome there in the book of Revelation. So the people of God are called upon to rejoice over the fall of their enemy. But here in Proverbs, he says, do not rejoice over the fall of your enemy. How do you reconcile those two? And there are a number of passages in the Psalms where there is rejoicing over the fall of an enemy. Well, I don't know if I have all of the answers on that. But why would the people of God be called upon to rejoice over Babylon? Well, read the whole book of Revelation and see how much harm Babylon or Rome had brought to so many people. The persecution that they had inflicted on so many people and just the moral ruin, the moral decay that they had caused for that entire empire. Read all of that. Then I would say that there's nothing in the world wrong with rejoicing when something like that has been brought down because so many people have been negatively affected. Let's get a little bit more specific here. We can probably all relate to this a little bit better. Think it was all right to rejoice when Osama bin Laden was killed? Think it was right to rejoice? I know that looking on Facebook, there were a lot of Christians who got on there and chided a lot of people for being happy that he had been brought down. And they cited passages like we read earlier from the book of Proverbs and others. Personally, I feel like that fits a whole lot more in with Revelation 18, verse 20. Here's someone who had been responsible for terrorizing a whole lot of people. He caused a lot of harm for a whole lot of people. I guess what I'm saying here is I believe those passages are talking more about personal enemies that we might have. Okay. When you're talking about those who have caused harm for a whole lot of other people and really need to be stopped, and justice does need to be served for them, I really think you have to put that in an entire different category. But now please don't take any of that to say, well, I'm off the hook now. I've got brother so-and-so over here and he said this to me and he did that to me and until... You know, things are a whole lot better. I don't plan to ever speak to him again. I don't plan to ever do anything for him again. That is absolutely an ungodly attitude. Let's don't forget the attitude of our Savior on the cross. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. So, once again, the three major points. If we're going to have a relationship with the Lord, a healthy relationship, we need to have a fear of Him. We need to avoid those things that are described as an abomination to Him. And we need to make sure that we treat others the way that we should, because if we don't, then we have no relationship with the Lord. Go ahead and get out your songbooks. We'll sing the song of encouragement here in just a moment. If you are subject this morning to Christ's invitation, if you're ready to come to Him, believing in Him, repenting of your sins, confessing your faith, and being buried with Him in baptism, everything ready is ready to assist you in that. If you need to come back to the Lord and make confession of wrong, then we would urge you to not delay that at all. We're prepared to talk with you and pray with you and want to make sure that everything is right with Him. If you have a fear of the Lord and you need to respond this morning, then you won't sit in your pew. You will make the right decision. If we can help you in any way, please come as we stand and sing.